Well, significant upgrades, ma'am.
Please.
Significant upgrades. For a country that had something like 24 downgrades over a long period, that is what we're talking about when you
But
say it's
24
turning around.
downgrades.
But you cannot in the circumstances say that we are out of the woods. But any
We are still in recession.
objective assessment would say that when you look at those particular indicators, yes, that represents turning the situation around.
There is no.
I don't understand how anybody can look at that and deny that.
What we have is the government has defaulted on the debt. Persons, local bondholders could
We have
have
had
paid on the
upgrades
price.
in
Because of the defaulting on the debt, what is happening is that persons are suffering, pensioners. But beyond that, the government also has borrowed a large sum of money for which they have not been able to use it in terms of investment. And therefore, what is happening is we have large reserves, and it shored up the foreign reserves, which happened under Owen Arthur before, when he borrowed money to shore up the foreign reserves. But it is not being seen in terms of persons benefiting, I mean, the average man in the street.
Roads have been improving, ma'am.
As a matter of fact,
They have been improving the roads.
the taxes, but the
We have
improving
garbage
the road,
trucks on the road. How many you
improving
see,
the
Candy? It isn't improving
But
for the
you see,
average person.
what I'm saying to you is your role should be, when persons present lies, you say to them, that is not true. Okay, they give an
But that's
opinion,
why,
you do what
that's
they have
exactly what
to
you're doing
do.
here with you now then.
Yeah, but you would do it with me, but you won't do it with the first
No,
caller.
you know full
And
well.
that's
You
why
know
I'm saying
full.
to you, I am saying to you, Mr. Ellis, and I'm going to leave it here. I am saying to you that this, our country, we will not develop. We will be, as a people, we will always be at the bottom intellectually in terms of discussion and understanding of issues when we address things in this kind of stupid, petty manner, instead of people rising to a level of debate.
Well, let
so
me say
thank you. Have
this.
a good morning.
Let me say this on this matter, because we have to contend with the views of a wide range of people when we look at what is happening in Barbados. And I really don't think that it is fair and reasonable to suggest that Barbados is a country where these alternative views do not find expression at all. I mean, apart from the comments that I hear from people like you and others on this program, and I want to say that since the change of government, after the state of shock that DLP supporters like they went through, there has been a resurgence of people coming forward and expressing their point of view. If they don't express that point of view in the nation, they'd go online and they express it somewhere. There is no shortage of people being able to say what they feel, and at times, part of what the government has been accused of, which is that people say that it makes decisions hot and sweaty, and then it changes its position. It is largely because people have been speaking out, and the government at times has been listening. So I don't hear or see the Barbados that you are talking about at all. As a matter of fact, I really believe that some of you spend more time trying to make Barbados look worse in that regard than it really is. And that's why we give you the opportunity to speak here. Sometimes you guys have far more time than people who are supportive of the administration. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello.
Good morning, David.
Yes.
I would like to tell that lady who now spoke to you before I get to my point. I want you to give me some time, though.
I don't know. The program, one of the things
I know you only got one.
No, one of the problems that I find with Brass Tacks, to be truthful, I mean, we started today talking about the issue of the politics, but I find that there are a lot of people who just can't listen to a program that is consumed by BLP, DLP politics. They just turn off of that because they say there's so much more And they want to hear the issues. They want you to discuss the issues. But once you are going to cast the issues only in BLP, DLP terms, they turn off, you know. So help me. Let's look at the issues rather than just look at the parties and the individuals and the parties as best as you can. Huh?
Right. But I hope, to be honest with you, David, I mean, at first I say, you started, you know, you start by introducing your preamble.
Yes, I understand that. But as much as possible, you don't forget. I located this here in the context of where the problems that the Democratic Labour Party is facing in opposition and what it will take to improve their situation. And recognize, yes, that Frondell Stewart was Prime Minister of Barbados, but we also recognize the timeline. And you ask the question, how relevant is he right now within the political landscape? Will it be better for the Dems or will it be worse for the Dems? You know, those are the types of issues that I'm looking at. And I think those are valid questions for debate. But you go ahead. What's your view?
I prepare to answer some for you. Mm-hmm. But I must first say that I can't let her go by. Mm-hmm. I would like to inform her that the university students back to the university receiving the education, Olay's pensioners receive increase. We have new garbage trucks and roads in Barbados is being fixed at the present moment. Now, Glenn Murray said that the Democratic Labour Party is not in a such a bad position, and he compared when the Barbados Labour Party had only three members in Parliament. But I want to say to Glenn Murray that when the Barbados Labour Party had three members in Parliament, never had we had a situation in this country like we've seen on the Democratic Labour Party when they made office. The three members in Parliament at that point in time never was saddled with the garbage, with the baggage that this present government, let's say that the former government is now saddled with.
What's that baggage? What's that baggage?
David, they had a lot, you only signed me to say something that I really want to comment on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, okay, Frondell Stewart, I mean, I'm surprised. I really, really don't believe that there's the Frondell Stewart who was a former Prime Minister of Barbados. I saw in the Nation newspaper yesterday, and it's only when you mentioned it this morning, I wonder if you really confirmed it, that he'll be speaking at Princess Margaret.
Yeah.
Is it really true?
Oh, it's confirmed, yes.
David, I mean, I would hope that this former Prime Minister Stewart, okay, would come and tell the people of Barbados if indeed there was corruption under his watch as a Prime Minister in Barbados.
Well, as former Prime Minister, he has spoken to this issue previously, and I think that we've had recent developments that would ideally prompt the question as to, you know, what do you say now? It's going to be interesting to hear the specific issues that he speaks about. And, of course, in that forum, one expects that people will question him as well. They will more likely be party faithful. But party faithful are also known to be people, many of them, are people who seek to call a spade, people who believe that a political institution cannot move forward just by ducking and hiding from its reality. So sometimes it's a question of where you ask the question because you don't want to embarrass the political party in public. But if you don't have a forum where you can actually ask these questions behind the scenes, you may find that the questions may come to the fore in a place like that.
Right, and there's some other things I would like him to address if it's really true that he's addressing this former senator. Because, like the lady said to you, I think the first caller, I would also like to hear him mention about the verdict that we had recently in the United States of America. Apart from that, David, I would also like former Prime Minister Stewart to tell the people of Barbados the current state of the Barbados economy now to compare with when he, Frondell Stewart, was Prime Minister of Barbados. He also must come and speak, David. I hope he would. about the sewers that was flooding on the south coast of this country, which tarnished this good country image. You know, and he must also tell us about the something I had in my mind. Or the homegrown programs that his former minister, former finance minister brought to this country that sick this country to a low, where we had to resort to the IMF, David. Let, I believe, and I honestly know, that right now there's some members of the Democrat Labour Party in anger, because I know they're disgusted with Mr. Stewart, former Prime Minister Stewart. And I know for a fact, I tell you, because I listened and I went close by to one of the former meetings that they had recently, and Mr. Stewart is not welcome again on the Democrat Labour Party.
Well, that's your assessment, but
that
I'm sure.
I know, David. Listen.
Anyhow, well, that's your assessment.
And I would not reveal it.
Okay. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Good morning, Mr. Ellis. How are you?
Morning. I'm well. And you?
I'm fine.
Yes.
Now, I really could call to talk about the hospital, but I shall just mention one article. The guy said about corruption. And I do remember, we all remember, about a member of parliament who should be fired.
Hold, stop. Stop. I am going there. Not going there at all with you.
Oh, well, yes, okay.
Not going there with you at all.
Okay, we're not going there. We're not going there. Okay.
Okay, that's right, dangerous. Okay. Stop, yeah.
No, I know, but okay.
Once you know, let me take your guidance from me.
All right, then. I know. Anyway, okay, let's leave that out. But let's get to the hospital. And we're going to start from the top and come down if you give me the chance. Private patients in hospital, you don't go into a private ward unless you have money. And you are sent there by a consultant who comes to see you every day. He doesn't send his registrar or his house officer, so you pay him and you pay the room.
I want you to be careful in that discussion too, because
yes,
I can tell you this.
Because
sometimes you all don't stop to think about these issues. Look, there are only so many consultants in the QEH.
I know.
And therefore, what you say about one, if it is negative, and two negative, can then be applied to all.
Yes.
And then I can have a situation where, you see, I'll be very careful what I had to say earlier. Now, getting involved in talk with no consultants.
All right. Okay. All right. Oh, no, we know, but here it is. Only a consultant can send you to a private ward. All right? But anyway, you are on the private ward. You have to go to intensive care, or you have to go to oncology, or you have to go to dialysis. Do you pay when you have to be transferred to these departments, or you know, become a public patient where you get everything free?
Well, you know, these are the types of issues that we were talking about earlier, that there needs to be a re-examination of that whole process so that the QEH is more at the center of it rather than what seems to happen right now, where it seems to be more on the periphery. It needs to take control. And that is one way in which, from all that I'm gathering, that's one way in which one can seek to secure a greater degree of viability for the hospital and to deal with all of these issues that we have around here, where people going in hospital and you can't get this and you can't get that. You know, this system is not working and something has to be done to improve it, rather than just sitting down here every day lamenting the fact that the hospital is under pressure. We need to get to the core of why and fix it. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Down to Brass Tacks, hello.
Mr. Ellis, good day to you.
Yes, sir.
Now, I first want to compliment you on the feature that you did on Kamau Brathwaite.
Oh, thank you very much. And what did you like about that?
I like the fact that, you know, you did a historical background on him. Lots of things that Barbadians really and truly were not aware of. And the fact remained that there's so much history behind Kamau and his place of residence and his place of birth in Barbados. That's why I'm calling you this morning.
We're going to repeat that on Tuesday.
On Tuesday?
Yes, but I think it will be Tuesday night, but I have to check.
Well, before we go to that, you and I had a very strong discussion in relation to the open window just below the IHOS, and we got some reaction, but we haven't had a follow-up as yet. So I'm wondering if there would be a follow-up or if it was just a situation of alerting us that somebody has attention, because they know for sure that you did a wide story on that. The Prime Minister probably then I followed up with you, and the Prime Minister probably made a comment in relation to open windows, not there. So we need to know what is the position on that.
Well, I get the impression that the private owner is asserting their own rights, and there is a clash now between the expectation of the government and what the private owner is prepared to do with the land that is owned by them. So we wait to see where this will go.
Well, that's true, because I read and you read that the purchase was done at the end of December 31st. I think that was carried in the press as well. My position on that, which I don't really want.
Well, I have to check and see if the fencing is actually down now. It is down now. So if the fencing is down, one can only conclude that the Prime Minister's will is prevailing.
David, the fencing has been removed. There's a chain, however, around half of the area it first covered. So one lot is chained off, and then the lot closer to the old, still abandoned building is open, and cars are parking there again.
So it's half and half.
Half and half.
Okay, thank you.
I believe, but first, I want to ask the question to those who might be responsible, the National Trust. Does we still have a connection to the World Heritage in terms of Barbados' position at World Heritage? The reason I'm saying this, Mr. Ellis, is that between the borders of Cavens Lane all the way up to the government electrical building, Upper Bay Street, there's a whole percentage of buildings in between there that qualify for heritage. I also want to take this opportunity to express the fact that the Round Rock, which is the home of Edward Kamau Braffitt, which was established in the period of my check was 1833, that should be considered one of the heritage properties on Bay Street. Having the background to the gentleman who was international, having the background to what he has been involved in, and knowing exactly that the place of residence as a schoolboy, as a youngster, is still there, I think it should be pulled in as a place of heritage. Because when you look at Bay Street, across the street from the same residence there is Woodside, the home of the former first ever Governor General of Barbados. And, you know, that is questionable as well, what is going on as far as heritage is concerned. When you look at Bear Mansion, which is just a stone throw away from there. So there are several properties on the Bay Street that I consider to be all part of our heritage as far as heritage is concerned.
What's the background to Bear Mansion?
Bear Mansion, it was the home of John Beckles many years ago. And the position on this is how the estate got started, the Bay Estate got started. Over there is one of those unique buildings in Chupon Park on Bay Street. You've heard the name John Beckles. I don't think it's the John Beckles that we know of for the John Beckles diverse. But the name John Beckles has been associated with the Bay Mansion and the acreage of land that was bought at the time to establish that estate. You also know Bethel Church, which is the heart of the movement of what we consider to be real heritage British town, that is Bay Street. The London Moon Towers, for example, on the land side, the former home of John Martineau, who, as you know, is the home of the birth of the Barbados Labour Party. Just across from that would be the Bel Air Jazz Club. And next to the Bel Air Jazz Club
We have various ways of highlighting the monuments that you really want to keep and to remind people of. It's a bit more challenging when you're dealing with people, though. And I come back to this issue of Edward Kamau Brathwaite.
Yes,
now, I had a pretty spirited exchange with some friends of mine about whether he had a large body of work. Somebody decided that they were going to just look at the poetry and say, well, he hasn't had any new poetry for a while, so therefore his work can be enormous. It's basically, it is not just the poetry, it is the totality of his work that you have to look at. But in a sense, when you listen to Brathwaite talk, you hear a highly radicalized Barbadian who, coming up in the Barbados that he grew up in, would have to pay a price. Because the first thing that you have to do in this country is that you must accept your English heritage, your English language. And here was this man saying, no, it is my nation language that stands out for me. And then this man goes to Jamaica and comes back here with a beard and a tam. Remember, we're talking about what? The 1970s, 80s? That sort of stuff was not accepted. So a lot of his work, and he's had some element of it has been controversial. And once that piece of controversy hits you, then all of the work is supposed to be tainted. And there's the work of the person is then, it is catapulted exclusively into the world of academia. It's not popularized, so a lot of people don't know what the person has been doing over the years. But my sense overall, in listening and doing the research that has been done on Brathwaite, is that he was particularly radical. And in those circumstances, many Barbadians would say no to him and his work. And that explains why we have not heard more about him. Will we eventually? I don't know. But
you know,
that's my view. Yeah.
My view, having read and having followed the background, that he in truth and fact, what you said, he had opposed the state quo at the time. He had opposed the British system in terms of the control. And as a matter of fact, in a colonial country like Barbados, where it is obvious that we were taught the whole disciplines of the English.
Little England,
right? So I think that in his own class, for example, it was said that his English was never taught at secondary schools in Barbados. That he was overlooked in relation to, I wonder if it was his dress, I wonder if it was the fact of the matter that after qualifying from an academic position, he spent a lot of years on the African continent.
He was outspoken. He was outspoken.
Down to the end, there was an issue in Barbados in recent years with having been placed on the outside of the runway at the Guadalajara's airport. I think you follow that.
Co-pastor, that's where he lived. But he had this passion for certain landmarks in the country, and he liked the idea that you would leave the country pristine and you wouldn't be putting up concrete and that sort of thing. I remember I went to interview him years ago when the same issue, Cowpaster, erupted, and the government of the day wanted to relocate him because they were doing some work with the airport and the runway and stuff like that. And one of the things that I noticed, it's something which is unusual here, that this huge centipede on the porch, and it was just, you know, making its way across. And I watched as Brathwaite did nothing, said nothing. You know, because essentially that was the man. He saw that as something that needed to live. It should not be touched. It was part of nature. And he let it go.
So. If you do a deeper study, Mr. Ellis, you'll find out that apart from the Round Rock on Bay Street, where he was raised and educated, you'll find out that the family had owned a percentage of property in Bridgetown too on Marion Street.
Well, part of the reason why you will also get the reaction that you get about Brathwaite is because he came from middle-class black stock. You have to appreciate these things about Barbadians. And there are a lot of people in Barbados today who are in positions of influence and authority, but they carry malice against other people who have come from a privileged background, and especially black people. More so, some people in this country believe that the white Bajans are entitled to whatever they got, but black middle-class people...
Nowhere.
Ain't got no right with nothing. And they have the... You remember the term... swinging the cudgel with malice, they swing the cudgel with malice more against blacks than they do against white people. That's our reality.
I'm closing. Would you support my call that the Round Rock place of residence, 1833 on Bay Street?
But we have so many of these buildings. That, you know, today's come out Brathwaite. Tomorrow it's a Frank Worrell's place. It's Garfield Sober's place where he grew up. There's so many people. I don't know that you can actually do it for everyone. And if people are sufficiently motivated to do something about it, then that should be done within the context of private sector, rather than waiting for the government to do all.
I feel National Trust has a responsibility as being the leaders of this heritage to establish that position. But very good discussion with you. I think we're on the same wavelength. My only position with the car park there on Bay Street, any establishment going there will cause a traffic problem in relation to where should you turn. Can you turn right or can you turn left?
It will solve the problem. Once you have a traffic problem, it is to be solved, and Barbados can solve it. You remember when people kept a lot of noise about jam busting? You know, people behaved as though the cars drove themselves. And we didn't have the capacity to brake, to veer off, to make decisions, you know. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, sir.
You're speaking to one of the strongest purporters of the jam buster. Idle lane for only going straight. I remember that vividly. There were signs placed at the roundabout. Idle lane. I think I can highlight one of them somewhere, still stuck up somewhere. Idle lane for only going straight. And the problem with the jam buster was always that person going right is in the left hand of crisscross, who's to the right of them to go around. That was always the problem. But one of the strongest supporters of the jam buster was Raul. How are you doing, sir?
I'm okay.
I learned through the grapevine that you are a karaoke singer, etc. And
Is that all you learned?
If that's all I learned?
Yeah.
I learned that you're an very assertive journalist of par excellence.
Okay.
Boy.
You've learned too much.
But there's to your credit.
So what you have a plan for us to meet for a karaoke session?
Yes.
Were you proposing to sing?
I can want you to sing against my brother Tony.
Your brother Tony.
I'm making the point. I can't sing, can dance and dance well, but I am going to bring somebody that will compete against you. I'll bring my brother to represent me in this regard, Tony.
So he will be singing for you.
Yes, he was saying to represent me, yeah.
Okay.
But I want you to know you'll be able
I don't think that's much of a contest. Problem. I prefer. I can't dance. I really can't. I don't let anybody fool me that I can dance. Because, you know, I hear a lot of people say, oh, but everybody can dance. But then I listen to them when they see the other people out there dancing, and they say, well, you got two left feet. So I'm not going to do getting involved with that at all.
Dancing is a rhythmical movement of the feet. A gentleman said to me years ago, roll your feet. There's rhythm. The rhythmical movement of your feet. If you see how some people take the 2 feet and really move with them, and the art of pivoting it and whatever, somebody's going to meet me later in the day. I can anticipate this and say, roll, you know, but no dance or something. But come and play it off a night at a venue, no?
Oh boy. I leave the dancing to my wife and the other people. I don't know.
Okay.
Oh,
but you can be taught, man. Don't knock yourself. You can be taught.
Not me. Are you, Dennis, you into this? No, Dennis and I are the same. You know, people who go to a fat and spend all the time sitting down talking to people at the bar and that sort of thing, talk about politics and this and that, and the dancers out there doing their own thing. You're one of the dancers. You go ahead, do your own thing. But you would be in a dilemma because the day that we see you at a fair, you're going to want to talk so much politics, you're going to be caught between the dancing and that.
No. I said, hold on. This is not the time for that. Seriously, people try to give me a little bit here and there, but I'm into dancing when I'm at a fair. So we hold up for another time, that kind of thing.
Yes.
Yeah, but now, quickly going forward, I have two main topics, but I just want to touch on some things you were spoken on earlier. Now, I have on record as making this point. You said something when we were talking about hospital, get what is wrong, fix. And fixing it is not building a new hospital, because I'm on record persistently and relentlessly saying a hospital costs, with a new hospital costs $1 billion, which is $1,000 million. No, that is not the real cause. What is wrong in the hospital to be fixed does not need a new hospital to fix it. So I will support my authority for you in that regard.
Well, you can build a new hospital, but if the administrative structures remain essentially the same, you may still come right back to the same problem that
we have
right now.
That's the point I'm making. You've got to have new administrative structure. That's all I'm trying to say. So the $1 billion dollars spent for a new building and all of this does not cut it. Now, the next thing is I'm on to this thing with some passion about the landfill, and then I want to finish with the politics of Mr. Stewart and whatever, but I'm going to have quite a bit to say on that laterally. But the thing, this landfill thing, which is a mission critical situation, if the question I want to ask is if 8,000 tourists go into the landfill monthly, in 2 months' time, you're going to have 16,000 terrorists going on. What is the situation after 5-6 months? Don't tell me again that you're going to have this eruption or whatever spontaneous combustion terrorists up again. You've seen those films, they think in the paper, where I think the terrorists burning, you can see the red, and then that black burning smoke come over that red. When you see that, it is like, what is this? Pray tell me. You're going to tell me that this is something that's really mission critical that has to be addressed like last week, not today.
Boy, there's some things that happen in this country that, wow, you say, they're potentially dangerous.
This has to be fixed, though?
We just scoff at them or just ignore them, hoping that they will go away. The problems at Mangrove and the extent to which they are posing issues for people in Thorpes and some of those surrounding neighborhoods, it's real.
It needs to be resolved.
Somebody said to me the other day, a former policeman, he was remarking that in the past, they would set up command centers for things like that. Because if you say to people living in Thorpes, move out of the area, it does not take into consideration the elderly and incapacitated who just cannot move and do not know where to go. And the person was saying to me that, you know, it is really striking that for all the change that has taken place in this country, we would retreat from a practice such as that. Now, I remember, for instance, when we had the Joes River crash, remember that?
Yes, I remember that.
At that time, the police put down a command center.
Mm-hmm.
And we are having a drift away from practices, and nobody explains to you why they have moved away from it. You know, it is as if it was not necessary. But we have seen from our own experience how it worked to the advantage of traffic flow and all of that.
Okay.
I mean, we need to, why are we not looking at these things? And if you're moving away from it, tell us why.
But I agree with you. I agree with you. But something was touted recently that some tires would be used at the
at the rock cement plant, whatever. But I've learned that to have them used down there, you have to take out the steel bedding and the steel whatever in the tire before that is done. Now, that involves shredding, et cetera. There's a big discussion as to shredding, no burning, et cetera. So the shredding thing has got to be taken in to account because the government said the plant has spent $500,000 on buying a shredder. There's a shredder on the island. Beast has a shredder up there by Mr. Paul Biner. We don't know what's going to happen. The bottom line is that I'm saying some solution and resolve has got to be brought to this.
But you know full well
that
it really cries out for a full policy position coming from the government. That's what it really needs. And that's missing at the moment. And we appreciate it. It's one thing to say, look, the former administration messed up with the Cahill project and that sort of thing. But that's water under the bridge to a large extent.
Yes.
What is required now is to hear from this government exactly how does it propose to deal with these issues.
Good point. That's it. The policy situation on it. You're very, very crystal clear.
Yeah, all right. Down to Brass Tacks, hello.
Hi, Mr. Ellis, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
I want to make a couple comments relative to the announcement that Mr. Stewart is going to speak at the Sunday meeting.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say this quickly to the DMs that I heard it's going to be Sunday, but I haven't heard what time is it beginning at? They haven't been given a time. So, to the DMs, make sure that the people get the time. Right. So, Mr. Stewart, speaking, coming out and speaking, and it tells me that the DMs have a plan as to how they're going to going forward in terms of the next election. That they have a plan. They're not just going here, there, and everywhere. They have a procedure that they want to follow, and they're following that procedure.
What's that procedure?
I'm saying they're not rushing. They're taking the time and they're doing what they have to do.
What's the procedure? Okay? That's the timing. That's not procedure.
I'm not part of the planning, so I can't. Okay.
Well, you see, you come here out of here, you say, it tells me that they have a procedure and they have a plan. And then I ask you, so based from where you sit right now, tell me what that plan is. What are you seeing? And then you come and tell me, I'm not part of the inner circle and I don't know. On what basis have you come to the conclusion that they have a plan?
Well, I've been noticing that, like I said, I'm saying that they have not rushed to do anything so far. But they have been having, as someone said,
rush, you got a plan?
Alright, they've been having some spot meetings. They've been having some town hall meetings or what they call the constituency meetings among branch meetings. And gradually they're building up, they seem to be building and moving forward. And more and more speakers are coming on board. I expect this to pick up steam going forward into this year. But what I really want to say before in the short term plan span here is that I don't want to dissect what happened in the last election and who was right and who was wrong, who did what. The Democratic Labour Party, I would say, hands were tight to come into that last election. There's not a lot of wiggle room they had. They didn't have very little wiggle room. The Barbados Labour Party recognized that they were going for the kill. They had something that they could go after and perhaps maybe wipe it out as it eventually happened.
All right. Let me ask you this question.
No, let me finish. Let me finish before you ask the question.
Okay.
They left no stone. The Barbados Labour Party left no stone unturned in going after the Democratic Labour Party. Okay? They were ruthless.
All right. Okay. I know you got your little script and but let me ask you something. If you say that the Democratic Labour Party administration had no wriggle room, would you say that when the BLP came to office, they had more?
Oh, I have said the Barbados Labour Party made a lot of pronouncements, a lot of promises, and some of them.
That is not the question I asked.
No, but let me answer the right answer. I said even they knew that some of the proposals that they were putting forward were not.
That was not.
Not a particle.
No, that is a different question you're answering. You said there was no wriggle room for the Dems.
I said little wriggle room.
Well, you said none. Now I ask you, well, when the BLP came to office in 2018, did they have more, the same or less?
They had to follow through on their promises, Mr. Ellis. They made a lot of promises.
You're being evasive. I understand. I understand. You've decided that this is exactly what you want to say, and you can say it nonetheless. Proceed.
Yes, of course. As long as you give me time, I can say.
Proceed.
So I am saying that the Barbados Labour Party saw the opportunity for a kill to nail the coffin. As a matter of fact, not only to nail the coffin, but to put the coffin down the ground and put the ball on top of it. And they did it with precision in that last election.
So you're saying the DLP is a dead party?
No.
Dead and buried?
I am saying that the bees saw the opportunity to wipe it out, and they wiped it out.
Okay, so it has been wiped out.
It wiped out to the point that it was 30-0 result.
Okay.
The opportunity presents itself as we go forward for the Dems to mount a serious platform and going into the next election. That's what I can see right now. And it looks to me, if the Dems come forward seriously in terms of tackling going into the next election, that they will, the next election will be a cliffhanger.
Boy, let me tell you, at the end of the day, I can't put myself in your place. I don't know what you are seeing, what you are hearing. I think it's really adventurous to say from this distance that the next election looks like a cliffhanger. There's a lot that can happen between now and the next elections, and I'm not going to go down the road and tell you, well, I can see that it definitely won't be. But I think there are, at this stage, there are more indications that it is going to be difficult to see it as a cliffhanger than to agree with you. But that is from where I said subjective assessments, different positions. But you really, when it comes to the Democratic Labour Party, and I listen to you with the passion that you speak about the Dems, you really are very optimistic. From where does this come? You know, one of these days we should perhaps sit down and talk about the experience in life that brings one person to support the Democratic Labour Party the way that you do, and then what makes somebody else support the BLP the way that they do? This is down to brass tacks. Brass tacks.
Hello, good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, morning.
Hey, I'm asking you to give me a chance. I'm having some serious problems here. I have a problem with my respiratory. I live in an area where a large construction is going on. The dust is killing me, Miss Ellis. I'm a chronic asthmatic. I have contacted the inspectors. They told me to contact the environmental department. I did this. They came in and they told the people to wet down the area and put up netting. The netting is quite low. They're not letting. My house is covered with dust. Miss Ellis, everything got this black dust. You can feel it in the sheets. You can feel it underneath your feet. You can feel it in the creases of your skin. You can feel it in your eyes. I have contacted the environmental department again. They told me they can't do anything. They don't have the power anymore to do anything. It was taken from them. I don't understand. What can I do? I want somebody to come with. I'm constantly being admitted to the hospital for asthma.
How many times have you been to the hospital recently?
I've been admitted in last month. I was there the month before. I always had the thought that my always.
How long has this construction been going on?
I think it was going on for over 2 years.
Over what?
Over 2 years.
Over two years? So you have had dust coming into your space for over 2 years?
Yes, a year and over.
Where do you live?
I live in lower southern part of Christchurch.
The southern part of Christchurch?
I don't want to identify
the want to identify the place?
Yes.
And I assume that there are other people around you who are complaining?
Yes, there are. And nobody had a meeting with us. They said no.
But this is ridiculous. If what you're telling me is correct, then this is the whole... What you remember we talked about the importance of having these so-called EIAs and that sort of thing. The whole idea is that in the construction phase and when it's finished, everything should be done to protect the interests of people who live around these neighborhoods.
They didn't have a meeting with us at all. No meeting. It's a large construction place. And they sent somebody to help me to clean my place. But they want to send the person once a month. The place, Mr. Ellis, I can't even clean because I'm sick.
Well, I can't establish. Are you male or female?
I'm a female.
Well, all the more reason why, you know, this needs to be taken more seriously because it has affected your voice to such a degree.
Every day, nothing but my breath. I'm having an asthma attack as I speak to you. I just came off the nebulizer. I happen to be using a lot of medication. It's not there for my heart.
But remember, one of my problems sitting down here is that anybody could come on the radio and tell me anything. And it's difficult for me to ascertain
I can give you all the information off the air.
Well, I really would appreciate that because I think it is something that we need to pursue. Leave your information there with Dennis Johnson and we will come back to you and try to see what is going on here. We can ascertain for ourselves, okay?